Hello and welcome back to the Rosbrait podcast. Today I am joined by Leo Nagao. Leo is a bit of a legendary figure in UK Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he is the definition of an old school Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighter in all the ways that you could imagine. Started way back in the day, originally with Carlson Gracie and Carlson's legendary Vale Tudo MMA team. And through his career, he's trained with a who's who of legendary Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA fighters. Also had a very successful competition career himself in both grappling and in MMA, and has been teaching jiu-jitsu for a very, very long time. I've wanted to chat to Leo for ages. He has some incredible stories, very, very funny stories, and he's just a super entertaining guy. I really enjoy chatting to him, and I hope you guys enjoy listening. Check it out.
So firstly, Leo, thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome, bro. So I say thank you, isn't it?
Now, it's a mutual pleasure, I'm sure. But, you know, you're someone who I know. I've been so lucky to talk to so many of the very early pioneers and some of the very early Brazilians, especially, who came over and brought jiu-jitsu to the UK and to Europe. So it's a pleasure to sit down and chat with you. You've been on my radar, obviously, the entire time that I've been doing it. So how I say with most people is, you know, how we do this podcast is, let's start at the beginning. So how did, you know, what was your first introduction to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, or if you did any martial arts before that, you know, what was your first introduction to that?
My father was already a champion, Kinkoshi Tai. Is I would say bad knuckles, was a kind of bad knuckles there in Brazil, you know. But again, the graces went in the time and beat up everyone, you know, put it down the ground, is mesh it up. Cool. So one day I was playing, you know, the games, I was playing a game, and then, you know, you put some money down on the machine, and then Castle come to me, touch my back.
Carlson Gracie.
The shop was just underneath his gym.
Okay.
He say, you know, you want to try jiu-jitsu? I look chain. Not now. He say, want to try or not? What is jiu-jitsu? I didn't know what jiu-jitsu is. He say, jiu-jitsu. He say, come for me. And then I took my things and went up. When I went up, you know, back in the days, we probably the younger generation don't know anymore, but Walidi, Vitor Belfort. Now, Vitor was young, you know, Vitor has the same age of me, but Vitor was there, was Paulo Filho, was Murilo Bustamante, and then Zamario, a few other Brazilian champions also, but it was a camp for Murilo's fight. And Castro said, listen, they are not your friends. I know you don't know them. You're going to put the boxing gloves. You're going to beat them up. They're just going to defend.
Okay.
So what? What? I can't do anything? He said, yeah, I can't do anything.
How old were you at this age?
Man, I think I was around 14 to 15. But I was big already, isn't it? Surfing, you know, do some karate, do some capoeira. And quite physically strong already. Mm. I had maybe 82 kilos or something like that. I was being big, it's something. And then he said, okay, go full. No problem. No problem. I say, oh, really? Cool. Blah, blah, blah. When I start to strike, he throw away on the ground. Mm. They take my back, choke me out. I say, fucking hell. What is this? He said, no, do it again. And then, blah, 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 and then that time I put him on the wall with the mats, you know, because we didn't have a fence there. We had a cage back in the days. He pushed me back to the wall, took my legs, put me down. And I say, fuck. And then I start to strike. He took my arm. That's Murilo. And I say, I don't have no chance of here. Fucking up. And then I was so tired, you know, because as you start to strike, put all your energy. And we say in 2-3 minutes you don't have you're done already, isn't it? It's something like you need to be really physically stronger to do it. And then I say, shit, you know. And then I start to think for myself, I must learn this.
Mm.
And then he said, no, sit down. I said, can I go again? He said, just sit down, come. And I sit down, and then I saw they spar and they training. And then after that, man, I was just there all the time. It's cool. Mm. And then down the gym, it's cool. And then down the gym, it's cool. And then down the gym. school and then down the gym. And I say, and I got, it's something like become part of me. You know what I mean? Because it's like you start to become a kind of religion, isn't it? It's not like you must.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like going to church. It's like
yeah, it's like going to church, but I was there all day long. So, yeah. And then eventually was a big exchange. And I stopped for a bit. And then it has one friend of mine was doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with another guy, Sergio de Souza, Bolon. And then he said, oh, come down, man. Maybe he can allow you to train for free because I didn't have the money, is it? So he said, maybe he allows you to train for free. You like this and that. I said, okay, let's go there. And then I went to there. He said, no problem. So then he gave him a gi. You know, he allowed me to train for free. And, you know, from there, I started to fight for his gym. Also was related for Carson.
Mm.
And I started over there.
So, I mean, there's already a lot to unpack there. Firstly, maybe one of my favorite introductions to jiu-jitsu ever is that Colson Gracie taps you on your shoulder whilst you're playing an arcade game and tells you to come train. I mean,
fucking hell.
That's a pretty
cool... That's for the chance, you say. You know what I mean? Become like Colson Gracie student, fight for his MMA.
Yeah.
Not MMA, he didn't have a fight to the team.
Yeah.
Is something like amazing. You know, if this happened, it's something like, oh God. So,
yeah, no, 100%. You know, I mean,
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I didn't realize because something like as you are there, you don't feel, okay, so that's a chance to be trained by Carson. You know, but what's unbelievable was the best guy on defense in Vale Tudo I have been seeing.
Well, that's it. A lot of people don't realize sort of the early Carson Gracie team and the influence that they had over Vale Tudo in Brazil.
Why people training jiu-jitsu now is they.
Yeah.
What else people was doing something else, man? Because that's what the team won. Mm. You
know? I mean, Carson Gracie, the original Carson Gracie, like you're saying, with Murillo and with...
Valid
and, you know, all of those guys and Belfort. And Paulo Filho and, you know, all of those guys. It was a legendary team for those very early days of Brazilian MMA.
Best ever, guys was very tough in MMA.
So did Colson basically, he picked you because you looked big and he wanted some training partners?
No, he wanted someone to test. Mm. Like if you have if you train someone and then you say, okay, so but he trained all the time on the gym. Mm. But as he takes someone he never see before, that person going to go 100%. He's no... You know, there's no doubt he comes to hurt. You know, but that's why I say the importance of jiu-jitsu is defense. Most of the time I see people attacking, but attacking maybe not. But as you know how to defend, your attack become even better.
Mm. I mean, we were talking before the podcast about Roger and about how, you know...
How he defend. Oh, God.
Roger was legendary. You know, before Roger, obviously I knew Roger before he was winning all of, you know, he was still a super high level, world-class guy when I first started training. But, you know, before he was the greatest of all time, gi grappler, and still is. And he was known for not for his ability to submit people. He was actually known as the master of escaping and defending and, you know, going up against the toughest guys. And, you know, sometimes these guys would get him in positions and he'd be able to escape every time. And then through that foundation of defense was able to then basically transition that and use that as a foundation to become one of the greatest submission artists. You know, that legendary run. I was out there in America when he did the weight and absolute, the Mundials with straight submissions.
Yeah.
But all of that came from the foundation. Was that?
I was in the mount. He mounted, that's it.
That was it. You know, it was
but people legendary. Doesn't know how to escape from the mount.
Mm.
You always go, oh, no, I know the building bolo. I know this, but how, you know how to skate for the mount. How you get a black belt then you don't know how to skate for the mount?
Mm.
Huh?
Yeah, but Roger Gracie's mount's a very different story.
Yeah, that's true. Now, listen, I don't want to disagree with you, but he's still like, you know, some people doesn't know how to skate for the mount.
You know, I think it's very possible that at that time, you know, the time when Roger was super dominant was an interesting almost transition between the old school jiu-jitsu and the next phase of jiu-jitsu. And, you know, his reign kind of marked the barrier between the two, I feel. And then, you know, we're moving on to an even further generation of different styles of grappling.
Yeah.
But Roger was someone who was doing super old school fundamental basic stuff when everyone had kind of put that behind them and was trying to do all of this new stuff and kind of showed that no, the fundamentals and the basics are still, if you do it correctly,
it works.
Still, you know, it still works better than anything.
That's true. So, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, a few question marks there, here and this and that. Because it depends on the guy. If the guy really physical strong, so, man, he can do both. You know what I mean? But some people, probably they're more flexible. And then you see that they do the block, what's it they call it, the lockdown, all the kind of things, because they're more flexible. But you count on your fingers how many good guys can do that movement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if your focus really in self-defense or fight on a cage, you cannot fuck a body for this, man. But those people start to go beat you up there, and then that's it. So, but it's tough because when you put a points and time limit,
it changes things.
Change the game. You know, depends who you're going to fight with. And then the time. So the time it pushes you. It's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
So when, you know, in these early days that you were training in, you know, your early teens.
Yeah.
Out with the Carlson teams, either with HQ or, you know, wherever else you were training. Were you doing competitions? Were you competing? And was it just jiu-jitsu that you were doing, or were you doing Vale Tudo as well?
When I was with Castle, it was more Vale Tudo. Because I didn't have money to buy the gi, isn't it?
So it was all no gi.
No gi, pal. And then shorts. Shorts and go. No money to buy the gi because it was, he has two rooms, right? The room on the right was just for Vale Tudo. The room on the left was sport jiu-jitsu.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's in Carson's. And then, you know, the room on the right goes, I go there because it's cheaper. Man, I don't have money to buy the gi, you know, so leave it. So, and then I start to learn a no gi. But if you see, I can call like a no gi more, less sophisticated than gi. Because the gi, as you apply a lock, if the guy really don't know how to escape, he cannot move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No gi, if the guy has the strength, he can escape. So, and they become a little bit different, the game, you know what I mean? So, it really depends. It's still like, you know, people going to say, oh, no, okay, so I agree for everything. So, I was not against, I'm just that you learn.
Yeah.
I was open to learn.
So, what was it like, you know, training in the gi for the first time after training just no gi? Do you remember?
I remember. What's really like, because if no gi, you need to be more explosive, right? So it's more explosive. You need to push the guy, you know what I mean? A gi, you can have a different pace mode. You can start at one point, wait, and then do another point. But in the no gi, is more like explosive, isn't it? So you need to keep pushing, see that you break whatever guy tried to take you, and then you keep pushing that. So it's different. Gi is a lot more difficult than no gi. And then you need to spend more time doing gi than no gi. We say if you train maybe 3 or 4 years no gi, so you can become a champion. But in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, 3 or 4 years, you're still white belt. I was 5 years in white belt.
Really?
5 years in Carson.
And that was even with the experience that you had no gi as well?
Yeah, 5 years. But that was already 5 years, man. No. So it's not like now people get black belts in 5 years.
So, you know, Carlson, it's interesting you say that because Carlson Gracie London, especially a little while ago, were kind of renowned for not giving, you know, they would wait 2 or 3 years to get a blue belt, whereas a lot of gyms would be 1 year or, you know, 9 months or 9 a year and a bit.
Yeah, but they are more. It's,
I agree with you. I think that we live in a society where people want things faster. And I think when you look at it from a business perspective, and this is the reason that Stripes came in. You know what? So most people who train today have been training for a relatively shorter amount of time than most than you, certainly you and me as well. But I remember when Stripes came in, like Stripes for blue stripes for purple.
Before I didn't have this, man.
This didn't exist. I mean, it was probably, you know, if I was thinking off the top of it, maybe 2008.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Like, you'd have stripes up until blue belt, and then once you were blue belt, there were no stripes. And I remember someone saying, okay, we're going to have stripes on blue belts, purple belts, brown belts. I'm thinking, why would you have stripes on blue belts? And of course, the whole idea with stripes is because you've got to give them some crumbs to keep them interested.
Just keep interested, people.
Because you tell someone, okay, you start jiu-jitsu today, you work really hard, in 2 years' time, you get a new belt. They go, 2 years' time? 2 years I've got to wait, and then I get my blue belt, and I've got to wait 3 or 4 more years. They want to every 6 months you give another stripe, and it keeps them coming back for more. And I think that's one of those things where a lot of places, the sport pretty much adopted that mentality to help grow the numbers, because they knew that the casual recreational jiu-jitsu athlete, practitioner, hobbyist, is going to want to have that. Those trails of crumbs led between each belt. But, so what you're saying basically is that Carlson's, that wasn't just Carlson Gracie London, but that comes from original Carlson Gracie himself, who would wait a very long time between the belts.
If you ask for the belt, no.
I mean, asking for the belt.
Asking for the belt, that's something like never do it.
I think even today, I don't think there's any gym that will allow you to ask for a belt.
That's really rude. That's really rude.
So would 5 years from white to blue belt be normal back then?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so, yeah.
That's a long time. I mean, even sort of on conservative measures, 5 years for a blue belt is
I need to tell you, I was training twice a day at least.
So you were training twice a day every day?
Yeah.
5 years.
Because I remember my gi. I still remember that gi, I tell you. I can't. It was mad ammonia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I was training so much. It was so warm in Brazil. Yeah.
The sweat was just embedded in it.
I was there, even for watch.
You do get like that
sometimes. I'm the first
roller
and say, well, kid.
I mean, I don't train in the gi at all, pretty much. And one thing that I like is you don't have that stinky gi all the time.
No, that's true.
I remember when I was in Brazil when we're training 2 or 3 times a day. And
You stay there, isn't it? You wash it nothing.
Every once in a while, you have to throw a gi away because the smell's not coming
ammonia
out.
Ammonia stays, isn't it? Mm. Ammonia, you have to kind of... very strong smell.
Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu is beautiful, give a very good base, and then also help you to pass through so many things in life.
Mm. So anyway, tell me more about, because I'm so fascinated with talking to people who were there in Brazil in the early days, especially someone in your position who was there in the middle of one of the most legendary teams in
jiu-jitsu. I tell you what happened. Listen, when I was there in Brazil, they had a competition.
There were no competitions.
No competition. The guy was running IBJJF and now CDM, one of my friends. I remember saying, bro, I don't have money to fight. He said, you know what? You come, you help me to put on the mats, and they don't need to pay the championship.
Mm.
I said, really? I'm here early. Mm-hmm. We went to that early, put on all the mats and fight. But the fight was taking longer.
So what were the rules? Do you remember what the rules were?
When the day was they was making the rules, I was there. I didn't say enough, of course. No, blue belt. We're going to say blue belt. We're going to say enough. So the rule is, if you're pulling guard, minus you.
Really?
Was Carson, Carlos Gracie, all the Grace family. Talking... Because think about it. If you're on the road, you're pulling guard. No one does that shit. So that's minus two. Right, cool. If the guy grab your leg, pull you down, that's only two because the fight carry on.
Mm.
If the guy pass, was three because he show he's working. Knee in the belly, only two because he don't have full control. If he mount, that's four because he has full control. He can finish the fight. Back, four because he has control. He has full control, and then the guy cannot strike. But more striking to prepare us for the real thing, like to fight against Luta Livre, to fight against another martial arts. Because the competition was to make ours ready.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, the competition was not like...
It was not testing jiu-jitsu against jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it wasn't making the guys ready for the fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you get a half guard, why is that advantage? Because you can strike, but you don't have a full control. That's a half.
Mm.
You know, half guard is just accidental. This happened.
Mm.
This is not happening, man. And then Gordo come for the half guard.
And change everything.
Yeah, and change because his knee was mashed. People ask, is it that's what man? Because my knee was mashed and started to do a half. But half, this does not exist because in a half guard, the guy strike you.
Mm.
Remember yes. that? Yeah.
I mean, you know, these days, half guard is one of the best positions to punch from in MMA.
Yeah,
like people won't pass the side control. They won't prefer- go to mount. They'll stay in half guard if they want to strike because you have control of
the
hips.
They have the control. That's why I say. So if you train a whole life for one thing, you're gonna get beat up in the road.
Mm.
So that, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But
no.
Maybe at least careful no one ever.
So it's really fascinating, and I want to kind of talk about this more and explore this more. Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, obviously called Gracie Jiu-Jitsu before it became Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
But Gracie Jiu-Jitsu was it was a self-defense. It was a fighting, you know.
It's too.
But you know, back in the day, it was designed as a self-defense. And then as time went, it separated into what we call sport jiu-jitsu.
Forget about this, man. This doesn't work.
And self-defense, right? Because we see a lot of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that does not care about effectiveness on the street, right?
Bro, listen, I took 5 guys now on the weekend for the competition. 5 medals.
Mm.
3 golds and 1 silver, 1 bronze. Mm. Only 5 guys.
Mm.
So what jiu-jitsu they learn? Self-defense jiu-jitsu. That's really? It, man. Mountain beat up the guy, that's it. What you want to do there, man?
So do you still teach very much with that? I mean, it makes sense because you come from that background that, you know, so for example, I don't, you know, the style that I teach, the way that I teach grappling, I don't really have any emphasis on self-defense because it wasn't what I was taught. You know, I was taught by Nick and he was a real competitor, he was a guard player. I think that's the main thing. Mm. When you have someone who loves to play guard, it's hard for you to tell people that it's self-defense based, right? Because the guard is not a position that you'd want to take.
I always remember if someone's bigger than you, normally you're going to be down. Mm. So you need to know how to block, how to design things that are down there too. So especially, when I start really jiu-jitsu was a lot of self-defense before we roll. Was half an hour self-defense, this and that. The role was to make you strong. Right? That's the role for it, make you strong. When someone comes to beat you up, you are capable to defend yourself. Yeah, that's it. Another thing is, man.
And you know, do you think that a part of that and maybe sort of the dissolving of the philosophy of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as a self-defense is because it left Brazil? Brazil is this... in some areas,
that was
a very
really
hostile
tough.
Place.
Really tough, yeah.
Where everyone in Brazil, you know, the idea that you need to defend yourself in America, most places in the UK, in most places in Europe,
it's safe.
You're not worried. No, yeah. People generally, and I can't
not
speak
yet,
for everyone. Some people are.
I think with the day we run off water, things go away.
It's another story.
But they reckon in the UK in the next 20 years we don't have a potable water anymore.
Mm.
So can you imagine the society? Mm. Another day they didn't have a oil on.
I mean, at the beginning of COVID, we ran out of toilet paper.
Yeah, and people fighting, Paul.
People were ready.
Can you imagine if you don't have water? This is just there in ours, though. People don't realize this. Yeah. You see, I went to the petrol station to buy water. And then we bought the water, £2.75 pounds.
Mm.
I looked there to see how much it was. The gasoline is $1.50, $1.40 something. Mm. The water costs more than the gasoline.
Oh yeah,
I bought everyone anyway. I say, yeah, fuck, let me.
I'm gonna have the water. I'm gonna have the good stuff.
No, but you see that why we talking? So it means things can go bad any time in your life. And then you need to mold into that situation, you know, get stronger, it pass through. If you don't realize what's coming, because we don't know, look, COVID, lockdown, this and that, what coming next? You never know. So I'm hours ready, isn't it? Hours ready.
So, you know, going back to your time in Brazil.
Of course, yes.
You know, was there a lot of you using Brazilian jiu-jitsu or using
on the road?
Yeah.
Of course, yes, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, man.
Because you hear all of these stories and you mentioned it, and it's something that I actually want to talk about, because I know that back in the day, in the very early days, and we're talking...
people come to your gym.
You know, 80s, 90s here? Or,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in the old school days of...
94, 93, 97, yeah, there.
That they would... that there was this rivalry between... Brazilian or Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and Lucha Livre.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah. And that you had, you know, and you know, you kind of alluded to it already, that Gracie Jiu-Jitsu was seen as the more wealthy because you had to have some money to buy a gi.
Gi.
And then the Lucha Livre was seen as, you know, for the more poorer people.
Poor people.
You know,
but they also come for background in gi. Right? So they also was training for gi.
So, but I want to know, from someone who was there on the ground at the time and probably maybe involved, you know, what was that rivalry like? Was there big brawls?
I was there on the day where they had the Lucha Libre against Jiu-Jitsu, isn't it? I was there.
So, you know, tell me more about that.
Bro, this was a war. The fight's supposed to be only open hands.
Was this on the beach or...?
No, it was on a stage. So it was...
this was an organized
event. So, and all the fighters from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Lucha Livre was a show for the TV. So it's not fists, just open hands, and you know, don't need to look that bad because they're gonna pass on the TV. And then the end, Ray Starr was, man, head, bottoms, elbows, this and that.
Do you remember who was fighting?
Was Murilo, was Validi, Fabio.
Gugel.
Fabio Gugel. And...
I mean, we got to say... So we're talking about Murilo Bustamante.
Was three fights in a night. Yeah.
Murilo Bustamante, Valid Ishmael, and Fabio Gugel.
Fabio Gugel. You know,
three bona fide legends of the sport,
yeah,
against three Lucha Libre guys.
And then Murilo and Fabio was my teacher's shoe, isn't it? So... That's
so you were there to watch your
No, that time, I was beginning of training on Castle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So really back in the days. And then I went to that to take a look at the fight. Man, was beautiful.
Yeah.
No, I say, again, you know what I mean? So one, you know, Jiu-Jitsu won, and then everyone starts training Jiu-Jitsu. That's the way it goes, isn't it?
So I mean... These guys were meant to be open palm striking, and then it just turned into a full valetudo match.
Full valetudo match. Yeah. Not supposed to be full valetudo match, and then come for the full valetudo match. But if you have a chance to Google what I was watching on YouTube, man, you know, I like fight. You know,
yeah.
So people like really fight, like grappling. They're gonna enjoy.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, there was more than that. Just that one occasion, you know, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, really was honed in street fights. You know, on the beaches. You
yeah,
know, in on outside
no,
nightclubs.
The point is something like the Gracies. If you was talk about Gracies, man, they was there. Chase you where you know, go to your where you live, whatever you do, they come and they stop everyone and beat you up.
Mm.
And I was there, and all the bollocks, you see people talking there, whatever. Mm. Send me there, man. I say, if you think jiu-jitsu don't work, send me there. You're gonna see. You're gonna see, yeah.
And you know, you yourself, did you get into any of these challenge matches?
Yeah.
Or?
So when I come to Sweden, few people was thinking jiu-jitsu didn't work. I showed them.
Okay.
So you go there, and I was there, everyone training for gi.
Yeah.
Because I was showing them jiu-jitsu work.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say jiu-jitsu doesn't work in the MMA. Look at my fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fast, man. Come to take it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not,
yeah.
It's not this or that bollocks going to pass for the second round. Yeah. Finish up the guy.
Mm.
So, but that's the mentality. It's about, you know, all my training was just defending myself. I take all my friends to beat me up, and I was just defending myself. The way I learned, anyway. So, you know, that's what the Grace of Jiu-Jitsu was there forward. I was forward. Because you want to grab the guy. I was forward, man. If you go backwards, the guy's going to beat you up.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, and it has few different techniques you must know, you must learn. You need to master the techniques. As you master the techniques, you're going to be capable to apply on the fly. If you don't master the technique, it's going to be really tough.
Mm.
You know, if you're really, if you, it can be a really good grappler, but if you don't master that X and Y techniques, it's going to be harder because, you know, that's where it comes, the sport jiu-jitsu and then the valetudo jiu-jitsu. You know, that the kind of blocking, what you're going to do. You don't see people that are doing spider guard.
Yeah.
Mate, you know what I mean? It's a butterfly guard, and then the way you don't want to get strike.
Mm.
So what are you going to do? He's going to strike. He has two arms, right? So we're going to train in that way. Because the guy has two arms. If the guy has three arms, we need to develop everything again. But it's a study pass for years and years and years in developing different ways and become that great jiu-jitsu, like someone smaller can beat up someone bigger.
Mm.
The bigger guy can get bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's the only good. That's the, like if you see the guy, like one of my favorite fighters is Royce Grace. Because you see something like he's 85 kilos.
Mm.
And then the other guys was 100, 110, 120, 100 something. They break their arm. Mm. He break his arm. Break everyone's arm, isn't it?
And so that was 93. Were you already training?
Yeah.
You were already training
by the time. My first competition, BJJ, I say, yeah, BJJ.
Yeah.
I won, it was 92.
So you...
No, 93, sorry.
So you knew that you watched Royce Gracie.
Royce Grace.
What was that like watching?
Fuck, you know, man.
Because there's a few people, you know, everyone I talk to, I say this every time, but everyone that I talk to, you know, either you... didn't know what jiu-jitsu was and you learned, you know, you saw jiu-jitsu for the first time at UFC 1, or you knew what jiu-jitsu was beforehand and you kind of had some inside information that everyone saw this 70, 80 kilo skinny Brazilian guy thought he was going to get beaten up. But everyone who trained jiu-jitsu beforehand, they knew that there was a secret weapon.
Of course, I saw, and then I say, man, that guy, he's amazing, because I spoke for Helson, and Helson say, Helson was ready to go, Helson Grace. Mm. Now I'm ready to go.
Ready to fight?
Yeah, no, Helson, his brother.
Yeah.
He said, I want to go.
Yeah.
But his father chose Royce, because Royce was the skinny one, because he want to show really the techniques work.
I know that they said, you know, that obviously the old story goes that Hickson was the champion of the family at that time, but... Hickson was jacked, you know. He was
stronger.
He was big guy.
Yeah, big guy.
And it wouldn't be as impressive Hickson winning versus Royce winning, versus who did not look very strong at all.
That's it, man. The guys was something like, if you don't train in jiu-jitsu, it's going to be impossible to go to the MMA.
Mm.
You must do groundwork.
Mm. UFC proved that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you don't know the ground, don't try to go there. Even if you're a very high-level boxer or whatever you do it, but you must, you know, few principles on the ground. To, you know, like, if you see people, like, even the wrestlers, they train in jiu-jitsu. They become a very good jiu-jitsu fighters because they train in jiu-jitsu. If you just do wrestling, try to fight MMA, you can be in trouble.
Mm.
1 point. Mm. That's what's proven, but on... Kevin Handman in his 97 or 96, Kevin Handman, few guys was fighting Brazil, the wrestlers come and then the wrestlers get beat up.
Yeah, they fought, now you mention it, they fought in Jungle Fight, right?
It was a Jungle Fight, yeah, they had a Jungle Fight, Carlos Barreto against...
Mark Kerr fought? I think Mark Kerr fought Fabio Gugelli.
Mark Kerr fought. Yeah, that was another fight. Mm. Was a big event in Brazil. Was 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Man, Fabio was a
one warrior. Round. One round.
One round.
Yeah.
No stop. I said, man, unbelievable.
Mm.
Because, you know, that time was just wrestling against jiu-jitsu. But Fabio was, he's walk around 93 kilos.
Mm.
Kerr was 110.
Built like a cartoon character. Yeah.
And then the head, you know, the head bottles.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's what make a bigger difference.
And I remember, I think, because there's the documentary, the great documentary, The Smashing Machine, and there's clips of the fight in there. And I believe that he was saying, you know, that he was, you know, you can see it. It does not look like MMA, does today. You know, the headbutts with Jungle Fight, the headbutts were a big part of it
that
we don't have in any, you know, Pride never had it, even though they had kicks to the head of a downed opponent. I think UFC 1 allowed them, but then, you know, later iterations of the UFC wouldn't allow headbutts.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had Mark Kerr just headbutting and then sticking his hands around the eyes in the cuts. And,
yeah, the cuts,
you know,
yeah.
Sticking his fingers inside the cuts. And it was just... Vale Tudo, and you're saying, you know, that kind of is your background. I know that you say you don't do MMA, but you do Vale Tudo because, you know, you look before.
That's it.
Before MMA was a word.
Yeah, Vale I come Tudo over here, about. And then has that guy. I had a fight. I think he's Rush or something. I don't know really his nationality, but I come to the show, and then the guy say, "Listen, he took the mic and say, listen, on my fight, I want to use the head, use the elbows, using this, using that. Are you okay for that?" I say, "Good, I'm okay.
Yeah,
let's do it." I break his arm. Because I say, "Listen, that's how I've been training."
Did they allow you to do a match in the UK with headbutts?
No, in that show, yes, because the guy...
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes to show.
You know what I mean? That show, the guy say, you want to do it? I say, of course I want to do it. Because I've been training for that. Yeah. So it's not something new for myself.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if we take another Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy, he don't want to accept because he didn't been trained for that rules. But as you're training really for self-defense, because on the road, no one going to throw flowers when you pass, bro. You see that someone throwing flowers when you pass, give you money on the road? No one does. Mm. So you must be ready. You know, I was ready. It's not this, like, okay, no. You're training, you know, you eat well, you sleep, you know, so I was ready.
Mm.
One thing about martial arts, what I think really important is your dedication and then your consistency on the thing you do. You know, if you're consistent, you're going to do right. Even if you do wrong, on the beginning, but your consistency, you're going to be all right. That's about me. I've never been all that technical like all my friends, like Terere, Leonardo Vieira, the guys I was training all every day. But I was there every day. You know, sometimes they had a week off. I never had a week off in my life, bro. I was training. You see? Yeah. People talk to me, I'm training. I was ready because I know that's life, isn't it? Mm. If you're not ready, yeah, man. People take you.
So sort of that mentality, you know, that it sounds like you had early on about always being ready, you know, ready to defend yourself, ready to fight.
Like you're going to open your gym, right? Come one guy there, get in the door, want to fight for you. What are you going to tell you in front of your student? You're going to say, "I'm going to fight. Oh, sorry, that's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu club." Say, "Fuck no, man." Sorry, excuse my English.
I mean, you can swear it's totally fine.
You know what I mean? But no. You come for the right place. People come and say, "What you want to do? Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, boxing, whatever you want to do, we do it."
Yeah.
You know, because...
But do you have that happen much in the UK?
In London, South London, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You had many challenge matches?
Yeah,
in
people
the gym?
Come down, put it down, and they say, "Listen, I even don't want to smack you."
Yeah.
They amount and they say, "I even don't want to smack you. It's not worth." I say, "You know what, get off." But, you know, and then eventually, in Castle Grace, I tell you, in Castle Grace, when I was there, I was in Royal Walk back in the days. I was asleep there in the gym, and there were a few fellas from Kyokushin Tai. They come, because we do the Kyokushin Tai. I say, wait, let me brush my teeth. I come back to talk to you. Brush my teeth, come back. Say, okay, what you want? I say, okay, no problem. As you're warm, let me know. I watch your hand and he doing all his stretch, all this. This is till 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. You know how I was pissed off with that guy. You know, but now the guy's a very good friend of mine.
He came where did he come to challenge you? To your gym?
To the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were teaching a morning.
No, I was supposed to teach one a private student of mine.
Yeah.
He brought his friend. His friend was doing kind of karate, I forgot.
Okay, so your private student screwed you over by bringing his karate.
No, screwed over by bringing the guy down. And then I said, but the guy now is my best friend. I don't want to say names. You know? But you know, when I mount, he say, "Oh, fuck, I need you to go to the toilet." I said, "Now I'm a mountie, you say you want to go to the toilet." I said, "Okay, no problem, go there." He start again. But they want to see if it was worth to pay the money I was asking for.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I remember... on the 90s, later 90s, people didn't know jiu-jitsu in the UK. Mm. Now everyone knows it works because you can watch UFC, Cage Rage, no, not Cage Rage, Cage Warriors, different shows in the country, McGregor, whatever you're doing yeah. there, what that kind of story. So means now people knows jiu-jitsu really works. Back in the days, no one knows. And they say, oh man, how you pay that guy 70 quid? You know, that's a lot of money. Let's check. When they come to check, my friend. That was a surprise. Say, fuck that guy good. And then they start to train for me.
So that's it. You just got to beat everyone up and then they'll be the student.
It's a kind of story. Eventually, if you're... listen to me. I'm just here talking because you know I'm a good fighter.
Yeah.
I don't know about fucking jiu-jitsu, but I'm going to know about fight.
Yeah.
Right? If the guy coming that way, I know how to deal. Mm. That's what's the deal. At one point, fights over everything. At one point, that's it, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So I don't want to say, give examples in life, but if you look around you, that's what happened. You fight every day to get up from bed.
Mm.
To go to work, to do your things, you must fight all the time. What else? You know, no one going to do for you, is it?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, going back to your time in Brazil, you know, you've mentioned so many incredible names. I just wanted to ask you, sort of, what was it like training with those guys? You know, Murillo and Valiant.
Horrible. That's what you learn.
I want to know how, you know, you sometimes... You know, imagine if you had a fly, you know, you could be a fly on the wall if you could stick a camera in the gym in the early 90s and watch the original Carson Gracie
team, you know, teaching people.
I've got the closest, I've got the next best thing, which is someone who was there himself. So,
I know.
Tell me what it was like then.
I can try to explain the but as your that feeling is different story, right? But man, it was tough, man. You had Zamario, was a monster. When the guy take you, crashing piss, and then Murillo, and then Valide, because I had nearly the same weight of Valide. I was sparring for him all the time because I was good sparring partner for him because we had the same weight, and then I didn't like to give up.
Mm.
Also, he never give up. That's one point. He never give up. And then I say, come on, let's go. But I get the fight mentality, you know what I mean? So a lot of people can be really technical or else know a lot of jiu-jitsu, past 3 hours in front of the YouTube, but don't get the fight mentality. If you don't get the fight mentality, you're never going to become a fighter. No way. You can watch 3 hours, this and that. I don't want to say names, whatever. There you're doing. But you're never going to have a fight mentality if you don't fight. You must go to the gym, training for the lions to become a lion. Simple as that.
And do you think that fight is, you know, that mentality, do you think that's something that you can learn or it's something that you're born with?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're allowed to say the latter. That personally, I think that's the case. You know,
I know the environment made the person. The environment made the person. You know what I mean? So, if you go to poor countries, you see the best fighters.
I mean, Dagestan's a great example for that right now. Right?
Fucking hell. So
it's a tough place to live, but
mate,
you know, they have like it's a population of like a couple of million but guys.
It's a very kind of a natural selection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where I come from, where I was the strongest. Because, sorry to say, but only myself I make. Mm. All my friends, they're dead.
Mm.
So it means you already select, you have the natural selection with for the environment. You know what I mean? So like if a few kids are born in Russia, we had too many kids here. Throw them in the snow. Who survives, we take it.
Mm.
That's the way it goes. But the society also make that selection. You know what I mean? So natural selection we cannot see. Because we are in the UK, so the infrastructure here is better than Brazil or in a poor country. So over here, we cannot see the selection. But in that kind of a poor country, you don't eat well and then you don't do things. It's hard for you. how can I explain? It's quite tough to explain for a British person or European person or American person how the life is back there. Because, you know, as you go to tourism, you go like to be a tourist there. You're just in your hotel, getting the food. They say that place is amazing. It's amazing when you have a money, Paul. If you're there, no money, you're in trouble. But how you're in trouble? Because you don't have access to technology. You don't have access to this. You don't have access to nothing.
And you're from Rio?
I'm from the favelas.
In
Rio.
Yeah. I mean, Rio is one of the best examples of what you're describing in the whole world. Because I think that there are very few places in the world. You know, Rio de Janeiro in Brazil is renowned for its disparity between the extreme poverty and extreme wealth in the same area.
Unbelievable.
Where you can go to Rio and you can stay in nice hotels and go to Ipanema and drink coconut water. And then, you know, you look upon the hillside and you see favelas with true poverty, with no money, with no resources, where there's nothing. Violence and guns and knives and, you know,
they don't have another option. Hold on. Yeah. As you give someone an option, it's one thing. But they say, oh, why they do this? Question. Do this what? The guy don't have access to go. It's impossible for him. Even if you go to school there, you don't see teachers.
Say again?
If you go to school over there, so you don't going to see your teacher. There's no teachers, man.
No teachers?
No, there's not so many teachers.
Wow.
Because listen, if you're a teacher, you go to a private school,
sure,
isn't it?
Sure,
to make money.
Yeah. Why so would you gonna go and teach?
That's it. Yeah. You teach the poor people, you don't make no money. So few teachers. So if you want to go, well, and then there's a site say, okay, why they do this? I say, okay, hold on. Let's go back here. His grandfather was a slave. His father, grandfather left for my father? None. What my father left to me? None. So can I go to school? No. So how this work? Okay, how? And I say, lock me, I start to do martial arts.
Yeah. And so many, you know, this is a common story that we see with MMA and with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is people born in favelas, in poverty, using martial arts, using Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, using MMA to be able to make a living, to be able to make money, to move out of the country.
To move out of the country. I was one of the first ones, didn't I?
Really?
So I wasn't the first one to leave Brazil. I had a vision because first time I come to Europe, I went to Rome. And then when I see that place, I said, wow, hold on. No one knows nothing here. Means I read in a book once, if you have an eye and how to say a word, if you have just one eye in a place, no one has has a vision, you're the king.
Yeah.
So, coming.
You saw that with jiu-jitsu, that no one knew jiu-jitsu?
In Europe.
Yeah.
No one.
When did you come over the first time?
Oh, fuck. I was brown belt. Man, this was ages ago. I got my black belt in 98. Oh, wow. I was supposed to say that. That's a long time ago. So, 98.
Why didn't you want to say that?
No, because my own people are going to say, oh, okay, they're going to figure out my age.
No one knows your age?
You don't need to say that. You're not going to ask me that question.
I won't ask you.
Oh, thank you. What the fuck? And bro, listen, and then what happened?
Wait, you got your black belt in 98?
No, I get my black belt in 98. But just before that, I went to here. I was champion, but brown belt was beat up everyone. Everyone. Even I won against Ricardo Arona. The guy never lost. Man, I was just, that was my life.
In gi or no gi?
In gi.
Yeah.
Wow. Even more complicated, I tell you. Yeah. Okay, no, the guy was a monster.
Strong, oh man.
Strong, bro.
Yeah.
Strong.
So, a lot of people don't know who Ricardo Arona is today, but he was I mean, I think.
Real deal.
I think he won ADCC and didn't have a point scored against
but
him.
I think his best scores in Pride.
Yes.
And no, everything goes.
Yeah.
That guy, proper.
Yeah.
So. You see, I was so worried, but when I get my black belt, I say, I need to leave. So what am I going to do in São Paulo? I was in São Paulo training for Fabio. What am I going to do here? I'm going to open a gym on my teacher's city, isn't it? Because, man, even if you're in London, we say London, you have a deep, quite small, because, you know, by the tube, you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, if my teacher has his club here, and then I open another club. No, man, I still have the mentality like a samurai. You know what I mean? Mm. It's my teacher is my teacher. You know what I mean? My master is my master. So the world is massive. You know what I mean?
So you didn't want to open. You didn't want to open anywhere in Sao Paulo.
But Sao Paulo look like it has just few areas. Mm. Something like people has money, but man, whole Sao Paulo is too many poor people. So it's there, we say it has maybe two neighborhoods you can open a gym. Yeah. They're close together, and then my teacher has his center just on the middle of the whole, you know, business area. Mm. And I say, you know what? I don't need this, man. Let me go. And then he said, where are you going? And I said, bro, I need to learn things. I want to talk different language. I want to learn. I want to eat different food. I want to do different things. You know, he say, you fucking get mad. So you're going to come back. I said, okay, bye. I left. He was really upset. But now we're in good terms again. Mm. Took me 10 years.
This is with Fabio?
This is with Fabio.
He was upset that you left Brazil?
Of course he is, isn't he? He explained a whole long time for me.
But did he understand that you were leaving because you didn't want to open a gym close to him? It was, you know, it sounds like what you were doing was respectful.
But I can't open another gym for him. You know what I mean? But my point was to get experience, you know. Like,
get out of Brazil,
learn different things, you know what I mean? Mm. I was champion, brown belt champion, but not black belt champion. But even black belt, I was fighting for black belt. It's mashed in anyway. So. And then they say, you know, I want to learn, I want to see different things, you know, like have experience. And then that's what took me to live in Sao Paulo.
Mm.
But I had a good life in Sao Paulo anyway, no complaints.
And where did you first go to in Europe?
It was Sweden. But just when I arrived in Sweden, you know, just passed the summer over there. Mm. You know, quite good summers. So
summer, did you say?
Summer, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had not contract, but kind of already fixed a job in Italy, in Torino. And then I went to Sweden. I spent the whole summer there. And then after, I went to Torino to teach. I was past few years in Torino.
And was Torino. There any Brazilian jiu-jitsu in...
Torino is south of France. Mm. On south of France, I was teaching Georges St-Pierre, armbar.
As in...
Yeah, back in the days, man. Really back in the days.
As in you
yeah,
taught...
Yeah, Christophe Lemidou.
You were teaching George St. Pierre had the door armbar.
Yeah, and Christophe Lemidou, his teacher.
Yeah.
One of his teachers on the ground. It was what the guy introduced me, gave me an introduction with one person in Italy. And he said, oh, come to, he was leaving Cannes in Jolipon. I'm security there, and then the probably can give some job on a weekend. You're going to like, it's like Rio, this and that. And then in Torino, man, and the mountain was snowing like a shit, like weather really bad. And they say, you know what? I'm going to take the train. I'm going to come there to see Christophe. And they went to there to see Christophe. And that's where I met Georges St-Pierre back in the day, because he also do karate kyokushin. And then his teacher was doing karate kyokushin, but there was interest to learn on the ground.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Because I met Christophe in customs also.
Yeah.
His teacher, Josh Thumpy, first teacher. It was a kind of, you know, Christophe is something like someone like from a family. Mm. He's also an MMA fighter, all this. And then I went to there, was work for him on the nightclubs on the weekend. Quite a nice time. So, and then in a week, I was working in Torino.
So, you know, you've got to imagine that if you did what you were doing now, you could travel as a well-known black belt. You could travel around Europe and you would go to places that had gyms and you could do seminars or classes or open academies or whatever you wanted to do.
Yep.
And people would know what jiu-jitsu is. You know,
yeah,
everyone knows what jiu-jitsu is.
Now, you see, some purple belts, I tell you, some purple belts have more students than me.
Mm.
Purple belt. The guy purple belt has some around 1,000 students or that. Because why? Royce Gracie was fight for that. Mm. Right? Because everyone see UFC now. Because Royce Gracie was there getting beat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see the fight against Kimo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what the real story. Now, purple belt, brown belt, they can make money or not. Black belt, they get black belt in 5 years and they jump in there. So,
but it must have been so much different in the 90s when you would go to a European city that has very people little challenge or no.
Bro, listen, in Sweden, I went to the karate gym, I beat up people. Taekwondo gym, I beat up people. Everywhere I went, there was a beat up people.
It's almost like you were... It's like you're a missionary for
kinda
for jiu-jitsu,
but no money.
Traveling the world, preaching the fist,
and show for people grappling really works.
Yeah,
but now jiu-jitsu fighter, no, they don't call more jiu-jitsu fighter, isn't it? Now it's a kind of jiu-jitsu become like a bollocks. It's not like you see they're training hard and doing the right thing. So now people, man, I don't know. So they don't. It's like. No, they're too rough. No, that's not our mentality. No, this and that, you know, like, so what are we going to do?
Do you think that's
they're savage. They call me savage.
Yeah.
Now, that guy is too savage. You say.
But you come from a different time. And actually, you're right. Like, jiu-jitsu is a very different sport today than it was.
Of course it is.
10, 20 years ago.
Now it's sport. That before was fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You train jiu-jitsu, people was scared about you. Mm. They see your ears, they say, oh God, that guy. You know what I mean? In Brazil, no one fuck about it for jiu-jitsu fighters, man.
Yeah.
So now, it's changed, isn't it?
I mean, even when I went to Brazil in 2008. That's going to make me feel old as well. Okay, I went to Brazil in 2008. And even then, when you spoke to the locals and you told them that you do jiu-jitsu people had a really bad reputation. Tough. Fights, you know, big dogs,
yeah, that's
aggressive,
it.
Yeah, you know,
that's it. Tattoos,
yeah, tattoos, oh, cauliflower ears, oh, and it's a very different mentality. It's a very different image than a jiu-jitsu athlete would have in America or jiu-jitsu has in the UK or in Europe, I think, and certainly in Asia and stuff like that. I think when they don't realize the origin, people don't realize where jiu-jitsu came from and how it was made.
Yeah.
So then they just think, oh, jiu-jitsu, it's a martial art. It's from Japan. It's about respect. It's about, you know, no violence.
Oh,
but then,
fuck.
Right?
Oh, fuck.
But that's what people think.
Right. So, okay. So, we're taking that way. All right. Fantastic. But it's not about this, man. Now you see the jiu-jitsu fighter now. I do surf. I do skate. Oh, crap. So you say, oh no, this and that. You know, I say, man, you can find another gym because hey, we're training serious.
I think, you know, the other thing as well that we have to mention is the lineage that you come from is, you know, the Carlson Gracie, for those who don't know, you kind of had the Gracie family split in half, basically.
Yeah.
And you had Carlson Gracie on one side with his very... Vali Tudo, MMA.
That was the only guy who was teach people for the favela.
Yeah.
Was the first guy who was teach people like me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To then, show the art for someone poor.
Yeah. And then the other side was Carlinhos and Royce and those guys who it was a lot more, you know, they were trying to, I think that's the big difference between that. And I think that's why, you know, people would look at the style of jiu-jitsu that you do and the way that you would, your philosophy of jiu-jitsu is still very Carlson Gracie based, and they'll call you a savage because they compare it to the business side of Carl Gracie Baja and jiu-jitsu for everyone, and it's family orientated and it's kids and it's, you know, everyone's wearing the white gi, and you know, it's very, very different from the Carlson Gracie side, right? It's like, it's almost two different styles within the umbrella of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
It's something you need to think about. It,
it is though, and you know.
You need to think about it, because Carlson was a lot more beautiful fight. It's not sport.
Yeah.
You know, you want to do sport, Jiu-Jitsu, it has two rooms. You know what I mean?
Well, that's it. That's kind
of... It has two rooms. Yeah. You know, because it's not everyone, like, I've been listening to some podcasts about people talk about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
It's not everyone going to come to the gym. They can train fast.
Yeah.
Right? They cannot train fast because, you know, they're off people, that kind of story. They need to come and have someone to wash his ghee, doing this. He need a fucking baby sister. So it's a different story, different time on a day they come. So hours time on a day for the gym is 2 o'clock. You know what I mean? Yeah. 2 to 4. That's what the hours time. The other time is just for office people. That's why we're talking about it. So, but it's still that people, they need to learn how to defend themselves. Because they are insecure. Most of the people, they're insecure in their life. So jiu-jitsu really help you to achieve different things. Because first of all, discipline, right? You need to get discipline. Just to get there is already a mission, right? So then you go there, even if you come on office time, we call it, the people normally they pay for the gym.
Yeah.
So you need to have a discipline to get there, put on your gi, do all the things. You need to do it. But you need to agree with me, this is also a good thing. But it's not really what really make that people come to us was the savage. Because we got the savage too.
The reputation
to be something. But in our day, we're losing that reputation. Because all then they're pussies. They become pussies. You see that? You just fight talking for the guy don't look you in your eye anymore. You say, okay, no. So they get really tough. Because they say this and that. But I say, man, in my gym, you can come different days, different time, and then choose what you want to do. I tell you, bro, what you want to do? What you're capable to do? So you want to go here or have them another student? He's more like, he talks for the guys doing this. I don't have a time to talk. We come here, we smash each other, that's it done. So, you know.
So do you teach these
No, not
days,
me, my student.
But do you teach with the two-room mentality?
Yeah.
You have some classes?
You need it. You're going to open your gym, you must have the two rooms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even if they're not physical rooms, the 6 till 7 class is this,
yeah,
and the 7 till 8 class
must
is that.
Disappear. Yeah. Because that would come jiu-jitsu for everyone. Mm. Make sense?
That is, yeah.
Yeah. You have a bunch of pit bulls there. You don't want to put some poodles to get it. No, man. Yeah. Super. The pit bulls there, people there. But now we see we don't got pit bulls anymore.
Yeah.
You see now? It's like,
Do you think this is it? Do you think that the sport will be watered down and it will lose all of the savageness of its past eventually?
It's in a way, isn't it? Because even the rules now for the competition is completely different from before. You know, like, even myself, when I was training for judo back in the days, was allowed leg locks.
Mm.
Now, even cannot touch the legs anymore.
Yeah.
So then what happened for that guy? On the road, what are you going to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy don't have the t-shirt, bro. You need to jump in there. He's like, put the motherfucker down and beat him up. Mm. You know what I mean? So, but, say, what are we going to do, pulling guard? I said, mate, that's a bad idea. But, see, some people do it. So, but I'm agree with you. We lose a little bit the fight psychology. Because it's like it starts to become more like... like rolling for just stuff like if you want to lose the stress, you are stressed, or all that kind of situations. I don't like to say, you know, I like to swear anymore. I don't want to swear. It's messing up your thing, but you know, like that's why I have people there in my gym to teach that people. I say to my students, you know, like. Few students, they go easy. I say, bro, listen, you're going to teach at that time. I teach at that time.
Yeah.
And then we sort the things out here because, you know, eventually people look at me, they're scared already. I don't know why, because they probably don't know me.
Yeah, you seem like a perfectly nice guy.
Yeah. Kind of.
I think that... It's difficult for people, especially people in the Western world, to understand where your mentality comes from.
You're a good fighter. You've been fighting in Brazil. You've been fighting in America. You know what it is.
Yeah.
You need to, you know, as you're going to fight against a lion, you can't fucking train for poodles, mate.
Yeah.
So you need to get beat up in the gym and then get there and beat up people there. Mm. What else is going to happen? So now you go spar harder. People say, no, it's a throw roll. I say, no, man, that's the wrong time.
Yeah.
No. That's the wrong. No, the wrong gym. No, here we spar. Come on. You know what I mean? Let you go. Whereas if you don't go, someone gonna take you there.
Mm.
I see they it's a flow road. They call isn't it flow road?
Mm-hmm.
I say, I'm sorry.
What do you think Carlson Gracie would say if he watched some people doing a flow roll?
No, let's go. No, get off from there. No. I remember one guy was doing one thing before on a gym there. He said, no, not in my gym. You don't do this here. You get off. I said, it was something like the guy tried to do something there. He said, you're going to get crashed. You're going to get punched in the face. You don't do this here. Forget about it. Even footlock, he wasn't so kind in footlock because the first defense for the footlock I learned was kicking the guy's face. It's true.
Yeah.
Because most of the time you try to take the foot, you get beat with your hands.
Yeah.
So it means you take one foot, but the guy has the foot there, isn't it? Free. Careful. That's what his idea. Pass, mount. And then learn how to beat up someone to mount.
Mm.
No one knows this. All right. Once I was there, and then Carson was telling the guy, for the Vale Tudo, choke him. But the guy didn't have the gi. Choke him, choke. I said, fuck, choke. How are they going to choke? And then I come, professor, how are you going to choke it? He said, let me show you. Go there. He took my neck, man, and started to choke. I said, hey.
With just his hands.
Awesome. Awesome. Proper.
That was Carlson?
Carlson, yeah. Said, yeah. You see, as you mount, you can choke. And then as you hit the guy in the mount, well, how are you going to hit the guy in the mount?
Mm.
He has two eyes in it. You don't need to be up one. You just be up one eye.
Yeah.
After 3 minutes, man, he get beat up and die. He cannot see anymore, is he?
Yeah.
He's fucking.
How old was Carlson when you were training with him?
Bro. That's a good question because he was maybe around 50, isn't it? Maybe that was a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah. And so
he come with his paper and watch the fight, but he has a very good vision, you know, about fight, about defense, about how you need to do what you need to do there. In that case, against who you're gonna fight,
yeah,
you know, that was the point already. So he was a coach, like tell you, okay, so no, this is gonna work. That guy gonna work this. Mm. So you need to work this. No. This is bullshit. This is that. Training this, okay. So let's see. Put it in there. Okay, you here, you there, doing this, doing that. He really knows how to put things together. You know what I mean? So that's the most important when you're a coach, to understand what's happening. What's the guy game? All right, his game, this and that. So that's what happened here. We came working that way.
Mm.
Very good coach.
So, yeah, you know, I was kind of just, because you're talking about him, wondering how old he was, whether he ever rolled, you know, whether he ever trained or whether you ever got to train with him.
I saw Carlson there. But of course, I was a trainer with Vale Tudo. He put a gi to teach sometimes on sport jiu-jitsu. But that he was just seeing make people doing things.
Because you always, you know, whenever you see, obviously, you know, famously Vitor Belfort's coach, and then also I think just before he died, he was Stefan Bonner's coach. You know, the one of the guys in that UFC, the Ultimate Fighter, the first Ultimate Fighter, Forrest Griffin and Stefan Bonner had this big fight, and it kind of completely changed the sport, and it sent this, you know, on this huge trajectory that it's on now. And I remember that, you know, you don't expect it. You expect the Carlson Gracie to be in the corner of these Brazilian beasts, and there he is training Stefan Bonner. And I think that he was with Stefan until he passed, and he always seemed like this guy, this wise master who was just in the background, who was kind of just teaching from, you know, not necessarily showing.
Yeah, I remember once, and then he was teaching, and then the guy, I think the guy was American, and then he started to talk just in Portuguese, and the guy looked at him, and then, you know, because people say Carson, but he doesn't understand the Portuguese. He say he want to learn jiu-jitsu, he needs to learn my language. It's not, I don't want to learn his language. This don't make no sense. But true.
He didn't speak good English then?
No. But he knows about jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu is a kind of language, isn't it?
You can certainly teach jiu-jitsu without being able to talk the same
language. Of course you do. That's why I come from just my gi over here and that's it.
What was your English like when you came?
None. Banana. That was all just my English. But okay, I improve a bit, isn't it? So I like to always improve. But yeah, something like, yeah, now I can, you know, we say communicate in English.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a kind of communication.
Thankfully, otherwise we wouldn't be able to do this podcast.
But you won't wait.
You know, since we're on the topic, when did you move over to the UK?
To the UK, for good to say.
I mean, for the first time?
Time I come over here was just one guy teaching. I was just passing by because I was in Sweden. I come just to do a seminar. I think it was in South Kensington. It was Chain. One back in the days in South Kensington. I think it was, he was teaching in a Budo Choir, I think.
Yeah, Chain Morris.
Chain Morris.
Yeah.
That was the first time I come over. And then after that, I come to see my friend. He started to open feet. And then went to London Shoot. Just back in the, just really, really old, in the holidays of London Shoot. They had a Ken Shamrock there, this and that. But I didn't come for the seminar. Yeah. I missed the seminar, but I said, I want to come at you to see that gym.
Yeah.
And I started to spoke for Luxies and Paul. That was really nice for me. I spoke a few guys there. And then he was really upset for his fighters. And then after my I told my friend in Brazilian, say, explain to him who I am. Because it's no point for him to be upset for the guys if I take, because I had already a very good background.
Oh, wait. He was upset with his guys because you beat him up?
On the ground.
Yeah, okay.
But he didn't know who I am.
Sure. So he thought some random guy
come for that.
He didn't know I was champion.
You know what I mean? He didn't know I was champion. He said, oh, fuck yeah. You know, and then my friend explained to him. He said, okay. But need you tell me? You know what I mean? And they say, well, but, you know, I'm trying to be friendly. You know what I mean? So I try to explain to you, but man, communication is really tough. You know what I mean? Because the guys come in and remember, say, what the most? But you know, he's a very good friend of mine now. And now, you know, when I see him, I say, I wish I was younger, like this, have him on my corner to push me because he's a very good coach. People don't like so much that good coach, I tell you.
Alexis.
Alexis and Paul. Very push you hard.
Yes.
So that's what you need.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. You need someone to push you. So what I was never going to do by yourself. Impossible. And some kind of people like this, stronger, can push you forward.
And then when did you come over to the UK permanent? And why did you decide to come to the UK permanently?
I need to tell this?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but it's up to you.
Again, the reason was I met someone. Right. Okay, so I met that person. And then eventually, after I was for her, and then I say, I'm quite settled here, this and that. She say, I'm going to move to Australia. I say, sorry? I'm going to move to Australia. You coming for me? I said, Australian. And they said, give me time. Let me read about it.
Yeah.
And you know, Australian people, they are not that kind, isn't it? Someone call a man. They don't.
No. Okay.
And then they said, they're quite funny there. Over here, they're better.
Yeah. Maybe.
And then I choose the UK. And sure. Then she left.
Do you remember when that was?
13, 14, 16 years ago.
So. Okay. So, you know, even back then, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu must have been pretty small.
Pretty small. I remember, was a white belt in my seminar.
Really?
Yeah, it was the guy who took me to the station.
Jude did?
Yeah, Jude did, yeah. So now the guy black belt, a few stars.
I mean,
champion on this.
You know, it's actually a great reference point that you decide to pick Jude, because when you're talking about the timeline of jiu-jitsu in the UK,
yeah.
Jude was the first Brit to get his black belt
you know,
fully in the UK. And he was a white belt at the time that you came over here. So that goes to show you, that when you were over here, and it's crazy to think that there was a time so recently, relatively recently ago, where there were no British-born black belts at all.
No.
And now we have hundreds and hundreds. To go to a gym now and to see five black belts on the mat doesn't, I mean, it's not really a big deal anymore, but at one time there weren't even five black belts in the entire country.
Entire country, yeah.
So yeah, you know, what was it like when you came over and setting up? And, you know, I guess, you know, the main question is, what are the biggest differences that you've seen between when you first came over and now in 2022, how jiu-jitsu's changed?
Shit, no, for UFC, everyone knows ground, isn't it? Everyone knows talk about McGregor, this, whatever, that. People watch UFC. They know more because I don't watch so much UFC because I think it's boring.
Really?
It's not, yeah, man. It's not real striker there. Say no head. I like the old school.
you don't like watching modern day MMA?
No, because it's not. Oh,
no,
man,
headbutts?
No headbutts. No elbows. No this. No kick someone in the face on the ground. Not I mean, excited anymore.
There's not many people out there who would watch.
Listen, back in the days, listen, when I wasn't in my 20s, I tell you, I was challenging everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone. I said, bro, I want to fight everybody. Even with the guys from UFC, whatever. I say, I can't fight anybody. No one want to fight against me. I say, why can't I want to fight UFC? And then the guys, oh, you need to cut 7 kilos. Back in the days, we don't have the same technology we have today. Yeah. So for someone like me, cut 7 kilos, nearly impossible. Because they had under, so 8'5". And then, you know, I was in the same team. Mm. And then they say, you need to cut 7'7". I say, how? You put this here in your stomach, doing this, doing that. I say, pal, but this will give me cancer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So fucking, what's the trade-off on this shit? Yeah. You need to look for the trade-off, is it? So I say, man, I put this in my stomach there. Now you take the skin and flap that. I say, oh, fuck, it's coming. You know what I mean? People say, your balls get smaller, your chin get bigger. Ah. You know what I mean? Leave it. So nothing else. And then they say, I can fight anyway. And then, that's it. And then that's it. They just put them on the side and they wait for me to get older, isn't it? That's what they do with good fighters. They put you on the side and then I leave that guy there, take another ones. And it's quite hard to build up a record to go and fight in the big shows because no one want to fight against you.
Yeah. I know it's a problem that a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu guys have and definitely had in the day, which was they would have maybe no experience, no MMA or not a lot of mixed martial arts experience. You know, they didn't have a big record, but they weren't looked at as a beginner in the sport because they were Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt or because they were Brazilian. And there was this mystique around a jiu-jitsu guy from Brazil that nobody would want to fight.
But so that's good for us. Now it's different, isn't it? Now it's
I mean, it's good in that you had that reputation, but then it's bad because no one would want to fight you. So I know that, you know, so many Brazilian grapplers struggled in MMA to get fights, basically.
Very, very tough. Very. When you're good, if you're not good, man, everyone put a Dutch fight, that's it.
Once they know you're not good.
Yeah.
So how many fights did you have in the UK? How many MMA fights?
1-2 here. One in Portugal, but I was qualifying. One I need a guy in the head. I didn't know the rules. I was training for Pride.
Yeah,
I was training. My camp there in Brazil was Nogueiras, the two brothers, Vito, Anderson.
Anderson Silva. I love your name dropping. So impressive and so nonchalant that I need to expand on that so everyone knows that you're talking about. You know, one of the greatest MMA.
No, but again, that guy was very hard for them to find a sparring partner. On the morning, I was training for Vito. Afternoon for Anderson, and then evening for Nogueira brother. Because I like to train. I say, listen, the only thing. You cannot be good at just doing techniques.
Mm.
You must just train. You must just spar. That's really important. And then I was there all the time on the gym. I had a chance to spar for that guys all the time.
Mm.
I come over here and it has that guy, oh, I have 17 fights. I never lost this and that. I say, okay, so no problem. Let's do it. That's it. Yeah. Before I was just good in grappling, this and I punched you. I slashed a punch in his face and then he tried to grab me.
Yeah.
I put him down and I think I passed. And the Michael wanna say, his head open, knee. Bro, you know. Because I went from my corner to when the ref started telling the rules or that. And then my corner said, no problem. If English is no problem. I said, really?
There was a problem.
The guy, I said, well, you understand that? They say, no, you just can't beat up the guy. I said, really? Are you sure? He said, man, this MMA show, come on, let's go. Bro, that guy's even black belt now, Rogers. I say, he fucked him up because there they were nearly finished up. There was a cage raid on the time. And they say, oh, that knee, because one shit happened there with that knee in the face I gave it on a guy. What his name was? Matt Ewing. I supposed to fight also for his teacher, but his teacher pulled out.
Yeah.
So I want to beat up everybody. That's why I say, listen, you know what? The only way to be good, people realize I'm here.
Yeah.
When you beat up the guys. Mm. So what else people never take in consideration, isn't it? Mm. You're just, well, because, okay, I don't have a big name. If my name was Grace, this and that, I can sit down and just read my papers. But now I need to go there and then do the fight. You know, but no one want to fight against me after that.
Mm.
After that, man, that's it. People, I say, oh, my friend want to give you something like 15 grand for one MMA fighter. Now one UFC champion stopped fighting UFC. He finished his contract. My friend said, no, we give you 15,000, you're gonna fight in the UK. The guy, no problem, come. And then when he saw my name, the guy pulled out. I forgot the guy's name. And then even Sakuraba, I supposed to fight Sakuraba.
Really?
Yeah. And was everything on.
Whereabouts, in the UK or Japan?
No, I was living in south of France back in the days. And my friend found that guy, one promoter, was looking for fighters to fight against Sakuraba. I said, I'm on. And then one or 2 weeks for the fight, the guy calls and say, listen, no, he looked for a warm-up fight. He cannot fight with Leon Agon.
Mm.
I say, fuck, you know. It's quite hard to change your life if you don't have a challenge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You must have the fight. I was looking for that fight. I said, man, I need to have that fight.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if I was fighting in the UFC? Shit, I go out and ask for money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you ain't no cash, pal. That's why I say, that's one of my dreams, man.
Yeah.
See, I want to fight. People really scared. I say, no, fucking hell, man. I need to do it.
Mm.
What does life get? Either if you never go up there to fight, no one gonna know you.
Yeah.
Like I come to was a competition. I took Simon,
yeah.
Deacon.
Yeah.
Dickie Mine. The guys from Castle Grace for a competition on the north somewhere there. I went there and then it has the white guy, plenty of tattoos, jump. The guy was look like a fucking bear, man.
Yeah.
Massive. And then no one want to fight against the guy. I don't want to tell all the black belts, big names there.
Yeah.
No one want to fight against
the guy. It's a grappling tournament?
Grappling tournament. Okay. Yeah, Jeff Monser. Is Jeff Monser?
Well, I remember you competed on the 10K ground.
No, but before
it's
that.
A different one. Okay.
Before that. People supposed to fight against him.
Yeah.
When the guy was there, no one want to fight because the guy was chill.
You're talking about Jeff Monson?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
His prime, bro. On his prime.
I mean, Jeff Monson was like a solid wall of muscle. The guy was just one of the most freaky looking guys ever, yeah.
Very good guy, man.
Yeah, very nice guy.
Sick.
Covered in tattoos everywhere, bro, but sick. Very nice guy, yeah.
Man, I come in there and then I was a warm-up dick and then someone come, oh, man. All the Brazilians pull up.
Yeah.
No one want to fight against him. All the big names in the UK, yeah? Mm. That names you can't think of. No one want to fight against the guy. I say, that's the fight I was looking for. Like, these people can see I'm good.
Yeah.
I come to Jude. Pardon. I come to Jude. I want to fight that guy in the first fight. Because I was lighter. I was a 91 or something, 91 or something. The guy was 100 plus,
yeah.
100, 100, 108 or something like that. And then Judah come to me, man, he's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Like this, he's going to hurt you. Leo, don't do it. I say, Roger, please. No one want to fight against the guy. I won't. Mm. Put my name there. I want to fight against him in the first. And then Roger was his teacher, I think. Mm. Well, his father was his teacher, whatever. And Roger said, you want to fight? I said, I want to fight. Okay, put his name, put my name. And then the first fight, I smashed the guy.
Yeah?
I smashed it up. But the ref gave it to the guy. Because he say, oh, the first minutes or the second minute or whatever, the first 5 minutes, I think it was 10 minutes round.
Yeah.
The first 5 minutes, no points, but you put it down, you pass, but for the first five minutes, I said, but why you did it to me?
Yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Why you give it to the guy? I said, you never mind. I did my bit. You know what I mean? Because I was looking to have that fight. Like, these people can take you. Okay, so that guy is a good fighter. That's the way it goes. So you people, sometimes they scare about the challenge.
Mm.
But the challenge is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, what else no one going to say, you know, so how are people going to know you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in this sport, you know, it is the main way to get yourself recognized is to get out there and to compete
and fight.
To challenge yourself and fight, yeah.
If you don't have the fight, quite tough.
Mm. Mm. So when was the last time you competed?
What's the name of the competition? Naga.
Uh-huh.
I was really ready. So, and then I say, I want to win 3 belts.
Uh-huh.
One of my age, I don't want to say. And then another one, the masters, and then one, the adult.
Yeah.
And then maybe the kids, I forget. I went to there. In my age, I won. Smack it up, the guy. And then I took it on the masters. I won the masters. And then adult, also I won the adult.
Yeah.
But big guy. One guy said, man, why you don't fight for the oldest? I said, no, pal, you taking the piss. I took the guy, man, I get it. You know when you listen to the guy's neck, tack, 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 tack.
Yeah.
The motherfucker didn't top. Finish the time, I say, motherfucker. I like the guillotine and side control, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then I say, fuck, he didn't top in that one. But yeah, that was my last competition in grappling.
Mm.
But, you know, and I'm just coach, isn't it? Gone, man.
Mm.
Age is coming.
You know, was that a conscious decision that you were going to retire from competition?
No, your fucking body starts to hurt.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was the kind of question that I was going to ask you because, you know, I don't know how old you are precisely, but obviously you've been training for a very, very long time. And not only have you been training for a very, very long time, you have been training very hard.
Yeah,
for a long time.
Go hard or go home, man.
Yeah, my question was
if you go there just to fuck about it, go do something else in your life, man.
Yeah. So, you know, how, you know, you always wonder when someone trains hard for a long period, you know, when someone trains hard, you wonder about longevity. So, you know, how have you been, you know, can you still roll comfortably? You know, are you riddled with injuries?
Listen, the point is, as you come for that thing, it's a kind of cycles, you know, you're going to pass few months, few times good, and then you get really bad, like you get ill, this and that, and recover again and carry on in cyclings. When you're younger, you just you don't stop. So as you're getting older, you start to feeling, you're going to feel okay 1 or 2 weeks, and then okay another month, and then okay that, and then really terrible. I carry on training.
Mm.
I was training, but I cannot train like before.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And then to recovery, take more time.
And have you learned any tricks to help with recovery or anything like that?
Train more.
Train more?
Yeah. All that recovering crap, man. And I'll tell you, you're always going to be shit. As you get older, you need to train. Yeah, train. Because what happened, you think about recovering this and that, you stop to train.
Mm.
If you stop to train, you don't train.
Mm. And then it gets harder.
Harder.
I mean,
think about it. If you go to vacation, I just come back. Fuck, you know.
Yeah.
So you feel pain, you feel this, but if you keep training, no problem.
Well, you know what? It sounds ludicrous, but there's definitely you're onto something. I think it's just about balancing the intensity of the training.
Yeah.
When you need to recover, and one thing that I've learned from my own injuries over many years of training. But certainly more recently, I've learned more, which is 100% rest is rarely the answer to anything. Because, you know, even if something is hurt, even if something is injured, If you completely immobilize it, it becomes stiffer or weaker, or, you know, a lot of the
and
time.
And then your brain too. Yeah. Your brain. Yeah. Listen, the worst thing is the brain. As you stop to do it, you just stop to leave. Mm. That's it. If you stop to do it, things, you stop to leave. And then what happened? If you don't learning, if you're not that conscious, like you start to think about the future, about what happened in your past, but eventually you just have a now.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just now, man. So then you stop to training, what happened to you? You start to get older. That's why people look at but you never get older. Say, fuck it, I'm old, but I'm here.
Yeah.
I was in a game. I was in a game. It's not every day you're going to win, you're going to succeed, you're going to do things like that. But you're always there. Mm. You know what I mean? I'm always here, don't worry. Next day I'm here, if I'm lucky enough. You know?
Yeah, you'll never win if you don't play.
No.
Yeah.
That's 100%. If you, like you say, if you, as you get injury, you try to work something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you're still working.
Yeah.
You know, it's still there. Or maybe try to do this, try to do that. I don't know. Something like, oh, your arms are hurt. Go running. Do something else. You know what I mean? Do something. But don't be at home there watching TV. Eventually. Eventually, you're just going to be sitting down there watching TV. Fuck it. Oh,
that's it. It's a trap, right? Once you get comfortable.
Yeah, tough.
It's hard to make yourself uncomfortable.
Very hard. Yeah. That's everything in your life. And then again, it's no one going to do for you, isn't it? Mm. You can listen to us here, but if you don't want to lift up your ass there and go and do it, no one going to do for you.
Yeah.
100%. Guarantee. Okay, you can watch YouTube all day long, watch techniques there, whatever. Amazing techniques. But if you don't go to the gym again, be up, you're never going to be a champion. Mm. What else if you never put your name on a competition? How are you going to become a champion?
Yeah.
You want to teach. You see some teachers that never been fight again, never been fight. So how is his student going to be a fighter?
Mm. Yeah, you know, that it's an interesting debate, that one, isn't it? And I remember Matt Serra said to Mark Lehman on one of the Ultimate Fighters, they were arguing, and he goes, you're like a swimming instructor who's never got in the pool. You know, because he said, because he'd never, or Mark had very rarely competed compared to Matt Serra. And it's an interesting discussion because, of course, you know, the most legendary, one of the most legendary instructors in the world, you know, most people would argue the greatest grappling instructor in the world right now is John Danaher.
But who's his teacher?
It's Henzo Gracie.
Okay, so now we talk.
Yeah. That's it, man. It's a good response to that, yeah.
That's it. Someone must have done it. You have a hard work for that guy learn.
Yeah.
Someone was working hard. Simple as that. Mm. Who's the teacher of the teacher? We talk.
Mm.
You know, the teacher of my teachers was one of the teachers of Carson, the teacher of that was Horse Grace. And then the other side was Carson Grace.
Yeah.
That's where I come from.
Yeah.
You see?
It's a strong lineage.
Yeah. It's not only me.
Yeah.
It's who's behind you. So John Danaher or whatever it is, being touched by Henzo Grace.
Mm.
So it's not John Danaher there. Mm. He's just there. You know, it's just an interface. Really, it's like a sock. Sock, you know, sock, you know. Like you plug in a light.
Yeah.
He's just a sock. But the main game is, the main guy is Henzo Grace.
Mm.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So there's just an interface. Like, okay, so like you got a car, you drive a car, right? So you're driving, it has the steering wheels, this and that. But the motto there is something else. It's not the way the car look. Can be that, but what it is there. Oh, the VA is it? That's what we're talking about. Who build?
Mm.
Who is the builder there? So they should know this, but no one knows who the guy, the architecture, made it. And they just see the pilot, isn't it? The one they're just driving.
Sure.
That's why I'm talking about it. People don't see it that way because they are not. It's like I've been doing computer science. As you look for application like Google or Amazon, you cannot see how much emphasis architecture. Was working, our team was working to make this alive, make this real. right? Because it's something like you need to know about coding, need to know all the things. But as you look for a bridge, you can really see, oh, that bridge look amazing. You know, you can really see that. What you was telling me about that person is reflect about someone else's work.
Mm.
Right? It's like me. I'm a reflect about the grace work. Right? So, yeah. But people don't say that because they're really proud.
Mm.
You know, they're going to say, oh, no, it was my teacher who was giving me all the direction. But that's why I say, that's why I'm a good teacher, because I pass straight through what I've been learning.
Mm.
And work. You can see, you can watch my fights. I've been fighting. I'm a fighter.
Mm.
You know, some people, they, no. They say, bro. Look behind me. Look at my teachers. All my teacher was on a cage, man. Yeah. Or I was doing Vale Tudo. Yeah. So I cannot be a man. I need to be good. You know what I mean? That guy good, 100% good. Because, man, that's it. Mm. So you say the best teacher in the world come from the graces.
Well, of course, we all do. We can all trace it back up there.
But
right?
People don't say that. You don't see no one say that.
Yeah.
Everyone say, oh, I'm the best teacher. Whatever. See, okay. Whatever you say. Yeah, we take it. You know, you don't get any argument. Better you say, okay, cool, fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Accept. It's like when you're going to marry and you sign the shit and then you work hard and then you buy the house where eventually she divorced and then take the house, take the kids away, find another boyfriend to leave in your house. That's what. You're going to live in the garage or live in the gym like me. It's all that crap. That's why I say, like you say, the lineage is so more important than you.
Yeah.
The lineage we people need to look for, man. The lineage, what the guy's lineage, what he have been done, this and this and that. You see, most of the guys who come from MMA fighters, good, they come from Carson.
Because
that's the lineage.
Yeah. Yeah. So, are we speaking of fighting, are we ever going to see you on the mats again, do you reckon? You don't want to, because you'll have to enter your age division, and then we'll find out.
Oh, fuck it. If I go for that, no way, I'm going to fight adult, man. What the fuck? That guy, you're a joker, man. So where are I going to fight at my age? I see the guy's all gray hair.
Would you, if you fought again, you'd fight an adult?
Of course, yes.
Yeah?
You're mad, man. So, man, he die like a samurai, isn't it? Irakiri, man. They call Irakiri. Cut your head.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. It's me, man. Fight. All this for fight. Master, grandmaster, all of us. So what's the reason? You fighting.
Well, the reason's probably because someone who's in their 40s or 50s doesn't want to compete against the 20-year-old.
So go home and wash the fucking plates there, man. Go there, do the dishes, man. When your wife say, go do the dishes, you do it, pussy. The dishes, mate. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Go do the dishes. Do something else, man. I say, man, that's why I say, listen, I'm not on my primes anymore. What's the point?
Mm.
So anyway, I like to go hard, man.
Sure.
I don't like to, man, and that's it, and then your knee pop. Ah, I say, yeah. You see, you're fucking old. You're supposed to do something else, man.
Yeah.
Go take the dogs or go walk the dogs. Yeah. Walk the dogs, man. Live for the youngsters, bro. That's it, done. You know, they go master this and that. Say, okay, so if you never had a fight and then you're a businessman or something like that, what else, man, you need to coach? Look at you now, you're going to coach.
Yeah.
So you don't got time anymore to train like you. You think you're going to train like you're training now when you get your gym?
I hope so.
We're going to have a conversation later. You cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot be a coach and fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, take all the people there. You're gonna take their head. But man, I know you. You wanna go hard. You wanna go to the, you know. So what's the point? So you teaching it now. You need to be, that's what you just about it. It's about passing the knowledge.
Yeah,
you know, when you see your students win, it's like you.
Yeah. Oh man, it's amazing. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You see, the guy taking it. Come on, swim in. you know what I mean? Go for the submission, man. I'll take him.
Yeah.
That's what's the beauty of the jiu-jitsu. That's what your lineage. Mm. That's why I'm more worried to come here and say my sensei was that one. That's why I'm good.
Mm.
People now they say, oh, this and that. I say, man, take a look at Royce Gracie, bro. I have my gym because Royce Gracie was fighting. If he was getting beat up there, you think someone was using jiu-jitsu?
Nope.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
No way.
No, because he got beat.
Yeah.
Now he won UFC a few times. Now I'm doing jiu-jitsu, everyone in the gi, pictures, all this, because of that guy.
Yeah.
But you don't see no one say that, man. People make a fortune in America. They have a gym there, 1,000-something people. But they say, okay, the greatest jiu-jitsu was the guys was around the planet there, beat up people, live in a garage, doing fighting. That's the reality.
Yeah.
But again, as you know, because I'm insecure, right? So I know I'm a good fighter. So that guy is probably not a good fighter. Look bad for them to say something like that.
Yeah.
You know, because they say, okay, they try to hide a little bit. You know, you want to say, now, Nick was my teacher, Nick's teacher was, because you're good.
Yeah.
Makes sense? You don't want to hide yourself, now I learn everything by myself. That's stupid. You know, so many people, I respect also, because they're business-wise, better, they say, I did everything by myself. I say, okay.
It's true. It's someone who's secure in their ability, doesn't have to talk themselves up as much as someone who is insecure in their ability.
Of course not. Because, you know, the person, you don't have nothing to prove. You already did your bit, isn't it? You went there and smashed it up.
Yeah.
So that's the key.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm quite happy in the UK anyway. So, because, you know, some people think, what are you going to do next? I say, what fucking next? I'm in here now. So who knows tomorrow?
And one of the final stories that I need to hear from you, because Nick mentioned it, is your modeling story.
Oh, that was horrible, bro.
I'm sorry. Usually that would have been a great place to end it. But since Nick, and he's letting us very kindly use his house, that I've got to ask you about it.
Yeah, listen, I tell you, very, very short. You know, look, just summarize the thing. I went to the gym and say, sold it. Fabio, I'm assaulted. I'm going to make a lot of money. Say, you saw my wife? I said, yes, I saw your wife. But she gave me all the pills here. Gave me the pills. I need to take the pills because my neck's too big. You know, that doesn't fit on the clothes. You know, because she was working for Chanel, Polo Ralph Lauren.
This is Fabio Gugel's wife?
Wife in
worked
Brazil.
For these companies?
Yeah. No, okay. She can get contracts for myself. Because she was working for...
As a model. Okay.
But
your neck was too big.
My neck's too big. And then he say, after class we talk. I say, fuck, when he say after class is talk, because he come to me. The guy is my master, bro. I need to listen to my master.
Yeah.
And then he come to me, he say, you know why you're walking in? You know that shit can fuck your life. This can fuck it up your head, that pills. So, bro, you don't want to become the same person. Don't touch that shit. Fuck off. You doing well, I was doing well there, you know what I mean? So, you know, for someone come from the favela, I had a car, I had this, I had a house, had everything. Champion this, champion that. Say, just throw that shit out. You don't talk about it anymore. I did it.
No more modeling,
no more shit. But the contract was very good money, bro. I tell you, really, give it.
But Fabio says no modeling.
No modeling. You come there to the change room. I was look, where is the man's change room? He said, don't mind. You can't change your hair.
Wait, this is the modeling place?
Yeah, the modeling place. All the girls, everyone change in the same place. And then they're careful.
It sounds like Fabio was helping you out, maybe.
Yeah, I think so, pal. That is a different world, like ours were. Yeah. Completely different. I was there, you know, and they say, oh, now we can take you abroad, this and that. You can sign a hair for us. And his wife say, no. First of all, you need to lose the weight. And then we're good to go.
Yeah.
And then I come Fabio, that's it. Salt it, bro. Man, I was a bit upset, but today I look back, I say I did the right thing.
Yeah.
So it's not everything, it's the money, isn't it? It's how you become a good person too. And then you take a path, good, you know, not, you know, like this can walk back and then say this was drugs. You know, because all the things you're losing weight probably do your head. It's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go crazy, don't sleep, this and that, whatever you're doing. So and then you're gonna keep taking. You don't want to take once because you still working. Mm. You taking and taking and taking, and I said, "Fuck off." Even myself, I didn't know I was looking good, bro. I didn't know that. I said, "Why can't I?" I say, she talked to me and say, "Sorry, what are you saying?" Really? I looked at Terry and said, "Terry, I'm on, not you." Because he was skinny, you know, all lean, all this.
Yeah,
you
know, like, in shape. Yeah.
He was all this and this, and I said, "Okay, Terry, I'm on, not you." So she don't want you.
Leo, thank you very much. Right, I really brother. Appreciate Oof. It. I mean, is there anything else that you were, you know, any parting messages that you want to say or
keep training harder, man? And discipline, you know, discipline is very important. Train hard and put a jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I would say jiu-jitsu is the best, and then keep training jiu-jitsu.
I think that's it. If there's any lesson from this podcast, it's train harder.
Yeah, man. If you don't train hard, someone gonna beat you up.
Yeah, that's true, man.
1 point.
Yeah, that is true. Leo, thank you very much. Oh, bro.
So, brother.
That is all for today, guys. If you want to follow Leo or find out more about Leo, then you can check him out on Instagram. His handle is at Leo Negao BJJ. That is Negao spelt N-E-G-A-O. You can also check out his website, which is blackbeltstyle.co.uk. As always, if you want to follow myself, then you can check me out on Instagram or Twitter, mainly Instagram, but handles the same for both. It's at raspberry_ape. You can also check out a Instagram account specifically for this podcast. If you have some sort of personal vendetta against me, you don't want to follow me, but you do want to follow the podcast alone, then you can follow that at Raspberry Ape Podcast. You can also check out my website, which is raspberryape.com, or get in contact about the podcast via email at podcast@raspberryape.com. You also can find my YouTube channel, which has this podcast, other podcasts, and some other stuff on there, which is youtube.com/raspberryape. As always, if you enjoyed this episode or indeed this podcast, please feel free to share it around with your friends, family, training partners. If you feel so inclined, then please head over to iTunes or Spotify and leave a review. It will be much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will catch you next time. Take it easy.